I'm Hannah Kipman.
I'm Catherine Orchard.
And I'm Hannah van der Vesthuizen.
And we are
the Fuckboy Podcast!
Welcome to the Fuckboy Podcast, the podcast where we delve into some of the most iconic, reprehensible, and shaggable fuckboys, girls, and folk.
No one is safe!
Who grace our screens, novels, and history books and ask why.
Why?
In this episode, Hannah is talking the sex scandal of the 20th century, brought back to the zeitgeist by the new Disney Plus series Pam and Tommy. And of course, we'll be hearing your best stories at the end of the episode. But first of all, how the hell are we?
I'm well. Are you guys finally watching Inventing Anna?
Oh, yes. Okay, can anyone do this extraordinary accent?
No.
So I saw a video of her and she was like, okay, so you sort of start off German. As we all know, I can do a fantastic German accent. You
could do a beautiful impression of the three pigs in Shrek.
And then she goes Russian, which is what, guys? Help me out here!
Russian.
Russian standard vodka.
Yes.
So it's sort of Russian and the German. And then it's sort of like everything is a little bit Americanized.
Oh my gosh, that's really good, Hanneke.
At the end, like everything's a question?
Yeah.
It's very impressive.
Is Anna Delvey in the room?
Oh my god.
Or is it just me?
Is Anna Delvey on our podcast?
So, question.
Yes.
Anna Delvey is actually German or actually...
I think she's Russian, right?
Yes, that's the whole...
But it's pretending to be a German heiress. Yeah, that's what I thought.
And have you already stalked her, the real Anna Delvey, on Instagram?
Oh my god, she has Instagram.
Yeah, she's a real person. She's.
But I thought maybe it might be down or something. No. She's still in jail? Like, what's the sitch?
No, I'm pretty sure she's out of jail now.
Is she doing TED Talks and things like that?
I don't think TED Talks would want her on, like, how to con a nation.
No, you know, like the Phoenix story, risen from the ashes.
Right. I don't think she's...
She's there.
I don't think she's risen. I think she's ashes.
Okay.
Do you think that she gets money from all of these shows?
Oh, they will have bought her story for sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure they must. Well, this is so interesting because obviously this is akin to what we're doing today.
I do find the kind of... current obsession with real life stories.
Yeah.
Quite something.
Why is that the case?
Like post OJ.
Because people can't be bothered to write original stories.
Yeah. I think it's kind of easier to write a story. You have people on board quicker and it's probably an easier sell.
What's that TV show that's like set in a small town in America?
Ozarks?
No, it's not. It's also a film. And they put at the beginning, this is a true story, and it's actually not. Oh, what's it called? It's like an incredibly famous... Fargo.
Wait, funny.
I didn't realise Fargo was a true story.
It's not, but they put at the beginning that it is, because it makes people more invested.
Wow.
That's why.
And I think it's also like a bit of a kind of joke. Like the beginning of Don't Look Up, I think they do a similar thing where they're like, this is based on real life events.
Yeah.
But not really.
And as is The Great, which is an occasionally true story.
Yeah.
Which I love, obviously. And nothing is more interesting than real life stories when you know that they've actually happened. But people are completely obsessed with them. It's a similar sort of feat to being obsessed with murder, I think.
Yeah. But then it's this weird thing about, okay, so it's based on a real story, but all of this is people's memories and recollections. And, you know, a lot of that can be fabricated. Yeah. So it's like... What is true?
I guess it's that thing of like it feels more voyeuristic, which is actually sorry to keep dragging it back, but obviously we're doing today the Pam and Tommy scandal in which I think people became so obsessed with that particular sex tape because it's like a genuine relationship, like it's not the fabricated sort of churning out of pornography that they had seen before now.
Yeah, totally.
Before that point, sorry.
And it's what Seth Rogen says in the show when he's like. The other guy's like, God, this is so personal.
Yeah.
And that kind of makes it even more hot.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, totally. And it's just, oh, it's so gross.
It's disgusting, but it's also probably the same with all the other real life stories like Inventing Anna.
Yeah, totally. Just, you know, through a sexual
Because that even that character trait of her being like, don't make me out to be a fool when you defend me in court. Have you got to that point?
Yeah.
And she's more keen to keep her reputation than she is to remain out of prison.
Mm.
And that, as a character trait, feels like, you know, as an idea, a concept, like, oh, yeah, that's pretty wild. But knowing it's a real person feels utterly devastating.
Totally, because you're sat there going, this can't be real. This couldn't have happened. But it fucking did.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that makes you keep watching.
Oh, absolutely. So, have you two seen the Disney Plus series?
I smashed it all last night.
Smashed it out, baby.
Apart from the second episode, but Kath has watched that episode.
Why didn't you watch the second one?
Because I was like, I have six episodes to watch here, and the second one goes back in time.
Oh.
So, I'm not going to watch it.
Interesting.
And then I had a fight with Jack. I was like, I want to watch the fucking second episode. I was like, damn!
Second episode's good.
I know. Apparently someone talks to their penis.
Yes. Penises are spoken to. I have watched the first two episodes and done some research.
Yes. Mm. So do you know why they have the speaking penis bit?
Oh, yeah.
Because in Tommy Lee's memoir, I think it opens with him having a conversation with his penis.
His penis is like his id.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, he is...
Does it have a name?
No, I don't think it does.
Not as far as I'm aware.
Yeah, not that I know of.
It would be on brand, though.
But it does have a voice.
Oh, yeah, and it has some serious movement.
Yeah, oh, yeah, it does.
Can you do an impression of the voice right now, Kath?
Well, it's Jason Mantzoukas, so I'm trying to think what he speaks like. He's, like, very American and, like, he like...
that. Are you giving me big penis energy?
Yeah.
I mean, like, not, like, small penis energy.
But... He plays, have you seen The Good Place?
Yeah, I've seen bits of it.
So he plays the waiter who, like, has no brain cells. The waiter, he's like the Janet 2.0 and is like...
Yes.
So awful.
Janet's boyfriend.
Yes, I think he is Janet's boyfriend. Yeah. And he's, like, super, like... like, his voice is just so...
Like Beavis and Butthead.
Yeah, I love him. I think he's brilliant. He really, really, really makes me laugh.
Yeah.
Like, the actor has a podcast and has, like, very good comic recommendations and watches funny stuff, so
amazing.
That was a draw for me to actually watch the show, because I was like, well, Jason is playing a penis, so
I'm in. Count me in.
Yeah, what does that come up as on his IMDb?
I wonder. I think it Tommy's is like dick. Tommy's penis, and everyone's like kind of gone mad for it.
Wow.
Very funny.
And is it Sebastian Stan's actual penis?
Oh no,
because Tommy, well, we'll come to it.
Famously schlarge schlong.
Yes, yeah, schlarge schlong.
Which is so weird, because it doesn't look that big in the little undie panties that he wears.
Well, when he pulls it out, it's a, he like, there's a scene, which I'm assuming you didn't see, or maybe you have, where he's like, are you ready to meet him?
Second,
and she's like, yeah, and then he pulls it, it's like he does an introduction to his penis.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Yeah, and he like leaves his number for her as Hugh G, what is it?
Oh, I don't remember.
It's like Hugh G Schlong or something, and someone is like, you have a call from Mr. Schlong, and she's like, she sees a thing and she's like, what the fuck are you playing at?
Oh, which it will come to, obviously. I just want to ask quickly, though, do you remember any of this from real life?
No.
Because it was essentially happening when we were born.
Yeah.
Yeah.
1996, right? It came out.
Is it?
The
sex tape.
The sex tape.
I think I knew that there was a scandal involving Pamela Anderson.
Yeah. Really?
Not at the time, obviously. I just, it was in...
Like growing up.
Yeah, whereas I think I only knew it was a sex tape.
It's like, wow, this wow, wonder child.
I was just so up on pop culture, which is why I like really take breaks now.
And this is why Kath can't remember anything. Brain's just full of pop culture.
From the noughties.
Useless, but
useless.
Entertaining.
Yes. No, I think I only realised that they had a sex tape when I saw this being advertised.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had no idea.
I did know, because I remember, like, when the Paris Hilton stuff happened, with the Paris Hilton sex tape, and obviously the Kim Kardashian one, I remember the conversation being that the original sex tape was Pamela Anderson than Tommy Lee's. But I, the reason I also know that is because, weirdly, Pamela Anderson married, I can't remember his name, but the person who Paris Hilton did that sex tape with and who released it and leaked it, Pamela Anderson married him twice.
What?
How rogue.
What's with Pamela Anderson marrying people twice? She married Tommy twice.
Yeah, I know.
They got remarried in 2008.
And three times the charm, so...
And now she's just divorced another dude, right? Who she was with for a year, I think.
Honestly, God bless.
What?
Okay, she's not given up.
Anyway, she really has. She has been through the ringer, and what a life. It's a pretty wild tale, but let's get into it. I'm going to start with a bit of backstory with our main gal, Pamela Anderson. So she was born on July the 1st, 1967, which makes her a...
Say it again.
July 1st.
Oh my God, what a shock, she's a Cancer.
Yeah, I know. When I found that out, and also I'm going to tell you what Tommy is later and you will also not be surprised.
Oh my God.
So she's a huge sex symbol and the OG rock and roll wife.
She's just a good Christian girl Canada.
Exactly. Known for her luscious blonde locks and the slow motion runs in her iconic tight red Baywatch swimsuit. She's now a wonderful activist. Mainly, she works with Peter, and she's done so much with her life.
She's like, who's Peter?
Like PETA. Sorry, Peter Petter. What do you say?
I think it's Peter. Peter. I don't know.
No, I think it is Peter.
No, it is.
It's just always so confusing. Like, who the fuck?
Have you seen her campaign with them, where she's like,
yeah,
her new campaigns. Oh my God. Glorious. And also glorious. That thing of not shying away after all of this trauma and being like, I need to cover myself up, I guess using it for a world of good is astounding and very brave. I mean, she is a very brave woman.
Very.
She is.
So just a quick trigger warning. There was a lot of sexual assault in her life, which I'm just going to talk about, so I probably can skip the next 15 seconds if you don't want to hear. But she suffered a lot of sexual abuse as a child. She revealed it publicly in 2014. She was molested by a female babysitter from ages 6 to 10 and raped by a 25-year-old man when she was 12.
Oh my God.
And then she was gang raped by her boyfriend and six of his friends when she was 14. So all of her life has really revolved...
I had no idea. That's so sad.
Yeah. Has really revolved around her being, like, sexualized. She's obviously faced loads of, like, spousal abuse and partner abuse, and remain this incredibly, like, sunshine human who wants nothing but to lead with love and make a positive change in the world. She's an incredible, incredible woman. And I think coming forward and expressing the truth of her upbringing in itself is just so brave, considering how people wanted to villainize her for being this sexual demon, which we will come to. Anyway, so her fame was thrust upon her in the most amazing way. I mean, this is covered in the show, but it feels like a story which you cannot believe is real. So in 1989, Anderson attended a BC Lions Canadian Football League game where she was put on the jumbotron, basically for being really beautiful. Attractive.
Yeah.
And because she was wearing a Labatt's beer t-shirt.
Yeah.
And the company were like, oh my God, she's
free advertising.
She is so hot. Let's use her for some ads. And instantly Playboy found her.
Yeah.
Loved her. Thought she was drop dead, which she truly was. And she was a natural in front of the camera. And in 1989, the same year she was discovered, she was on the cover of Playboy.
Wow.
From her first shoot. Can you imagine?
Flown over from Canada, right? To the Playboy mansion.
And met
Hugh Hefner, who was so nice in the show.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's not... A lot of people say that, like, you know, Hugh's like their father figure or whatever. Like, he definitely has a good relationship with a lot of the Playboy bunnies.
So interesting.
Yeah.
Like, I think in my head it was... He was a real villain.
Yeah.
And actually, it's not that black and white.
No, of course, it's going to be so nuanced and complicated. And also, just, it's very hard because it's like he wants the best for them, but under a very specific set of circumstances.
Oh, yeah.
Complicated. Mm. Anyway, so she actually is the model who appears the most in Playboy of all time.
Wow.
With her blonde hair and minuscule waist and 34 double D fake boobs.
Woo! Which she doesn't have at the beginning.
The first shoot that she has with Playboy, her boobs are real, yeah, and then she gets them done because her mother gave her the blessing.
Yeah, exactly. And Hugh actually calls her the DNA of Playboy.
Wow.
Okay, so she went on to do a bunch of TV and film alongside her modelling. But before we go there, this particular story starts in 1995, on the New Year's Eve of 1996, where Pamela Anderson meets Tommy Lee, the drummer from the Motley Crue. So Tommy is known for mooning the crowd at every single show and having his drum kit float above the crowd as he's playing.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's cool.
So he's a Libra, which
I thought he was going to be a Scorpio.
So I thought he was going to be a Scorpio or a Leo. But I think Libra, for me, there's a big element of like Libras thinking that everyone wants to have sex with them.
It's not a thought. It's true.
It's a fact. Okay, and that tracks.
I feel like this is a missing piece of Jack. He just doesn't... Maybe he secretly has these thoughts.
I probably secretly does. What play was he in when you met him?
I think it's knowing...
Good point.
Yeah.
He was playing a gay rent boy.
Yeah. And also I think it's like knowing that you're an asset, essentially.
Yeah. Well, when he gets back, we should quiz him.
Oh, we absolutely will.
Yeah.
So he and the band were known for decadent behaviour, both on and off stage, often consuming excessive amounts of drugs, such as cocaine, heroin, pills, and of course, so much alcohol.
Whoa, so he was a casual heroin taker?
Yeah. Yeah, they all were.
That just blows my mind that people can take heroin in like a semi-casual way where they're not doing it every single day.
Yeah, oh, totally. And I think this was... the time period where people didn't quite... It was quite aesthetically not as shameful as it perhaps is now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, dabbling in heroin wasn't quite what it is. Like, if someone said that now, you'd be like, oh, that's... You're one step away from being...
deaf.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, with that in mind, setting the scene... Ooh. It's the 90s. It's Los Angeles. Ugh. It's the time of rock and roll in the Viper Room. It's real LA and it is tabloid culture. It completely controls the narrative of everything. So we're at a New Year's Eve party. Tommy spots Pamela Anderson across the room, instantly besotted. What does he do? He walks up to her and licks her face, quote, from chin to temple.
Oh my god.
He's such an animal. Like, he's...
Yeah. Do you guys fancy him in the show?
I mean, yes, but I fancy Sebastian Stan in every single form.
You stand for Stan.
Yeah, I stand for Stan. But then pictures
fit.
Of Tommy, I'm like, whoa!
Oh, yeah. Absolute worst nightmare. And apparently he was like super moody and really erratic. And so
but
I think
he's so nice to Pamela.
In this show.
Yeah.
Well, it's very interesting... We'll come to this.
Okay,
we'll come to this.
Interesting.
So initially, even though this isn't really portrayed in the show, apparently she really wasn't that into him at first when she first met him.
Uh-huh.
She was actually quite like, you're a bit much.
Unhinged.
You just licked my face. Yeah. All of my face.
That's great.
But she still gives him her number. Mm-hmm. And she's very reticent, but she does it anyway. And 2 weeks later, he calls her and she's like, no, sorry, I can't meet you. I'm going to a shoot in Cancun. And when he asks to come, I know, imagine, what a life. And when he asks to come, she's like, oh, I mean, obviously not, you weirdo. So she goes to Cancun. What does he do?
No.
He just turns up.
You're joking.
Did you not? Is that what happens in episode two?
The whole of this is episode two.
Oh my gosh. The whole backstory of their relationship is episode two.
Oh, well, welcome. Fuck. So yeah. So he just turns up in Cancun and she's like, in the show, she's actually quite thrilled about it. But in reality, she was furious. Apparently, she was absolutely fuming when he turned up.
So why doesn't the show show that?
Because there was so much bad behaviour around... with Tommy, but there was so much love. They were obsessed with each other that I think they really wanted to try and paint how far they fell.
Yeah.
So having all the negative stuff in the initial episodes, I think you just wouldn't buy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you wouldn't feel the tragedy of the falling, the dissolution of this relationship, yeah. I assume.
Okay. Because they had to fit it into one episode, basically.
Yeah, of course. Anyway, all of her mates are like, give him a chance. He's really fit. He's really fun. And so she does, and boy oh boy, does she take a left turn. They have an incredible time on their second date. I believe they go to like a string bikini contest. But Pam has never done drugs. She's like a good Canadian girl, like you said. And Tommy introduces her to ecstasy. In the show, he gives her a pill.
Uh-huh.
I believe he wrote in his book, in reality, he was spiking her drinks with ecstasy.
What the fuck?
And whether or not she took the ecstasy to start with, and then he was just continuing to spike her drinks, who knows? But it definitely tracks, because on their third date, technically, he's in a bar. He starts shouting, Pam, I want to marry you! I want to marry you! And after knowing each other for 96 hours, they get married.
So I think an interesting fact is that Tommy's parents got married after about a week.
Really? Mm-hmm. That's so interesting.
Yeah.
Especially because he had already been married once.
Yeah.
He was
recently divorced.
2 months before.
Yeah, and because of spousal abuse in that relationship as well.
Ooh.
So I wonder if that was a more long relationship or like longer lead up, and Tommy was like, that doesn't work. But he was obsessed with Pam. Like, he was completely besotted with her too.
Tunnel vision.
Yeah. So he was like, she's the one, she's all I want. And yeah, they got married after 96 hours.
Like Dirty John vibes.
Very much so. It's so interesting as well, because like Britney did the same thing, Kim did the same thing. It feels like Pam's set off all of these recurring, huge tabloid
weddings.
Tropes. Yeah, like, or just the big scandals that people have regurgitated afterwards. But I feel like what happened to Pam was so against her will, like even the ecstasy spike.
Well, if she was drugged, then...
Yeah, but also she did, like, I think she did want to, and she did consent, and obviously they were massively in love. That is very quick to get married.
Yeah, Jesus.
Just quicker than Love is Blind, in that sense.
Yeah, I was going to say.
So they got married on a beach where she wore a white bikini and he wore khaki shorts.
Ew.
I know.
Again, Dirty John.
Dirty John.
What the hell?
There were 8 guests, all barefoot, and then right after the nuptials, he threw her into the water.
Well, she was in a white bikini, to be fair.
I know, but I would still hate that. I'd be like, I'm dry.
I have done my makeup.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And my hair
took an hour.
I got a blowout. So they were the original rock and roll couple. A quote from the New York Times said, a shocking commitment for the rocker who was known for binging on groupies, drugging heroically, and swallowing small light bulbs for kicks.
What the fuck?
What the fuck?
What the fuck? I know. That I was literally like, that is the most deranged thing I've ever
like
heard in my
life. It's like a little kid swallowing a stick-on earring.
But like a
no
light bulb.
No one wants to.
How?
A stick-on earring! Can't even, they're like this small. Did no one do that? Did you do that?
Yeah.
That is not a universal thing, Kath. I'm sorry to break it to you.
Swallowing stick-on earrings.
Never in my life.
I think it was maybe my brother actually that swallowed it.
Nice. It runs in the Orchard family.
It does.
I just can't get over. I would be so scared if I swallowed a light bulb. That would crack inside of you and kill you, surely.
I found a pin in our dog's poo the other day, and that was truly harrowing.
That's so distressing.
He's a puppy as well.
Oh
so,
my gosh,
like,
don't. I actually can't. My toes are curling.
It was awful.
Oh god. Okay,
imagine shitting out a light bulb.
Surely that would break. That's what I thought.
On the exit.
Oh. Does it for kicks? Anyway, so after their marriage, they were celebrating. They were having martinis and smoking joints all before noon. And they continued to do this when they got back to LA. When they arrive, they decide that they're going to move into Tommy's mansion, which was just about to be renovated. So they decide very sweetly that they're going to renovate it together and make it their family home.
Surprisingly beige house for a rock star.
Oh, but that was not the plan and not the intention. Because the current contractor was called Ran Gauthier, who is Seth Rogen's character in the Disney series. And obviously the demands were just like super outrageous. Taking that bland house to something else. Some of the demands were a koi pond, a pillow room, a heart-shaped glass and iron door setup, a 20-foot mural of heaven and hell in an elevator shaft, and a 30-foot swing in the living room hanging above the white baby grand piano.
Okay, guys, have you seen Cara Delevingne's Open Doors on YouTube?
No.
Fuck me. You need to watch it.
Oh, really?
She has a door that is a vagina that you can crawl through into a secret room. She has a sex room with a swing, with a sex swing. I mean...
It tracks.
It's endless.
I love that for her. I love that for that pat photo of her and what was her name? Her ex-girlfriend when they're carrying
Ashley
that sex.
Benson?
Yeah. they're carrying the sex swing into their house.
Oh, seriously?
Yeah.
Good stuff.
That's so good.
So a friend of Tommy and Pam said his name was Gwerin Swing. Sure. He said they spent money like they hated it.
That's such a good quote.
Oh, wow. That's an amazing quote.
Yeah. So when Gautier was sick of their demands and he was ready to simply write off the $20,000 that they owed him, even though Tommy had refused to pay it anyway, Rand was fired. But when he came back to the couple's mansion on Mulholland Drive...
Woo!
On Mulholland Highway, actually, to get his tools, Tommy pointed a shotgun at him, saying, "Get the fuck off of my property." And Gautier was pissed. So,
okay, can I just ask, how did you feel about that first episode, Pam and Tommy?
I watched it basically when it came out, so I'm struggling to remember because I feel like I've been on such a journey with it. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was absolutely... wild what Tommy, his reaction, and but I think it's absolutely despicable what Rand did.
There's
no competition.
What did you think? What did you think of like the making of the
tone,
like the tone in this?
I was like, what the fuck am I watching? Pamela's barely had a line.
Yeah,
it's called Pam and Tommy.
Yeah,
you are putting forward this character as if the story revolves around him and his fall. And it feels like this is a moralistic TV show, but the tone of it is pure hedonism. And it was confusing, I found.
Well, because it's based on that Rolling Stone article, in which it really it does really centre the narrative of Gautier.
Yeah. What did you think?
I fucking hated it. I thought it was really lazily made. Like, every single fucking shot is a steady cam zoom.
Yeah, it's not
every single shot.
It gets better, for
it
sure.
It definitely got better. As soon as the narrative switched to Pam and Tommy, I was like, okay, I'm here, I'm invested. I personally just don't like Seth Rogen.
No, like, I don't either.
I really don't jam with his
Well, also, I feel vibe. Like it's that thing of being like, we love to make stories about boys who are doing nutty things.
Yeah. I don't want to watch consistent shots of Seth Rogen wanking.
No,
I'm so over it.
I think that they should have made him a... So, let me give you some background on Gautier, and this might help. So, I've lifted this from the Rolling Stone article. So, Lee made Gautier feel small, and Gautier had spent his entire life feeling small. He was a guy who, on his 18th birthday, lost his virginity to a Vegas hooker. Here he was...
Oh, poor you. I just don't have any sympathy with this guy.
Yeah. Here was an LA boy through and through, struggling to disassociate himself from his famous father, who starred in the original Bye Bye Birdie on Broadway and was Jaime the robot on 60s com Get Smart. By the 90s, Gautier had gleaming tanned muscles, broad shoulders, and an eager, trusting smile and a voice that was equal parts surfer and Ernie from Sesame Street. Most people dismiss him as a doofus, a conspiracy theorist who likes fast, powerful cars and dating porn stars. He even did some scenes himself and spent time hanging around adult film studios, building sets and chatting up starlets. His nickname became a studio troll.
Ew.
He actually took part in pornos like Miracle on 69th Street and Willy Wankers and the Fun Factory. But like, essentially the article paints him as like a really sad figure. They even talk about how female porn stars wanted to have anal with him because he was
the star with the smallest
penis. Yeah. So really, I think like they don't really set him up to be quite as sad and pathetic in the series.
I found like it was trying to get the audience on board to really sympathize with him.
Yeah.
And I was just like, I don't feel sympathy for this guy because what he's doing is atrocious. And like, who cares?
I feel like it needs to be at the expense of him.
I agree.
But they've not really done that, and I wonder if it's because Seth Rogen is an executive producer on it.
So I also thought about Seth Rogen is like, the energy that he brings to any show is like the history of all of his performances, which is this like happy-go-lucky fun guy.
And he I don't like, know can't get a shag.
Yeah, and I don't know
the
whether
nice
he
guy
was,
trope.
Yeah, totally.
A pick me.
He's
a pick me.
And I don't know whether he was like trying to jump genres and like kind of change his casting with this show.
Yeah,
or if he just for some reason identified with this awful, awful bloke and was like, I want to show his side of the story because it ruined his life. And I don't know whether that's the tone. I've not seen the whole show. None of us have seen the whole show, right?
No, because so, it's not out fully yet.
Exactly.
But I'd rather see this character as like a flawed, kind of slightly, maybe even, you know, disturbed, psychotic, angry, vengeful human being.
Yeah. Rather than just like stupid.
Rather than just like, oh, poor me, I'm so sad. Yeah. Like, I just don't find that appealing at all. I'd rather he, you know, like Tommy is a dreadful bloke, but he's a dream to watch because he is owning his flaws
and a troubled man.
And a troubled man.
Yeah, totally.
Whereas it felt like manipulative.
Well, yeah, totally. And I think also this thing of being like, this all kicked off because Gautier's pride was damaged by Tommy. Mm. And he was really scared and horrified by having a gun pointed at him, of course. But the whole narrative of him being made to feel small his whole life and then taking revenge upon this person who behaved like a god is so much more interesting than the narrative they've told in the show.
And like, we've all been there, right? We've all had someone
you want revenge.
Well, you want revenge, and we should be like gunning for this character, and I just wasn't at all.
No. Well, I mean, it really was like a recipe for disaster. His sort of upbringing, how humiliated he felt, and the fact that he could come up with a really good plan to get back at Tommy. So, totally humiliated after being held at gunpoint, Gautier, Tommy and Pam's recently fired contractor, and allegedly his buddy Troy Tompkins, who had also been fired by them, decide to rob the Lees to get revenge, to make Tommy feel vulnerable and realise that he was just a human being and not an invincible rock god, even if he had sold 20 million records by the age of 32.
Ooh, can that you imagine? Is wild.
So Gautier said that he spent the entire summer of 95 preparing for the heist. He would drive over to the Lee's house several nights a week and sit and stare, waiting outside until 3 or 4 in the morning.
Wow.
But this is what's so wild about it. So on the day, he just parked up outside opposite, and he'd obviously been parking up loads throughout the night. And this was completely normal because we're in that time where perhaps we'd just be outside celebrities' houses all the time, totally invading privacy.
Wow.
I think they show this in the show, actually. There was a point where Lee was arrested for pointing a sawed-off shotgun at paparazzis while they took photos of him and Pam kissing.
Oh, my God.
Terrifying. And photos of them went for a massively high price. Yeah. When they got married in Mexico, there were some Polaroids of them in bed that were stolen in April. So, like, again, this keeps happening to them. There is just no respect for their privacy whatsoever. And they made their way to the French and Dutch editions of Penthouse, which is important. Remember that for later. And Anderson was initially really upset, but she fatefully told Movie Line later that when she first saw the Polaroid, she was like, whoa, baby, we should frame this. So in the end, who cares? But they sold for a fortune, and that particular statement came back to bite her in the ass later, basically admitting that she doesn't care if she has no privacy with the narrative that was given. Just awful. Anyway, back to the heist. So Gautier had installed all of the cameras, so he knew that they were super unclear, super grainy. And I actually, I love this heist story. I know he's a piece of shit and we obviously hate him, but I'm obsessed with it.
The fact that he dresses up as a dog.
Yeah, so good. So he uses what is it? I want to get it. Yeah,
it's like
I
want to get it right. Rug or something, is
it? So it's a white Tibetan yak fur rug that he puts over his back, and he crawls on his hands and knees to the garage looking like his dog. I wonder if he did any little like cheeky barks or some animal studies in advance.
I really love that bit in the show because it's so clearly a carpet.
And he even like starts to stand up.
Yeah.
Dude, no. Dogs don't walk on their hind legs like that.
Oh my gosh, it's absolutely wild. But he gets away with it. He dismantles the cameras and steals their safe,
always that classic shot of a security guard, like
reading
a newspaper and eating a donut.
It's such a bad rap.
Is that all they do?
Yeah, security guards famously are not portrayed well. They're not good at their jobs, in according to TV and film. So when he cracks open this safe, he expects to find, you know, maybe some guns and some cash. And he found, well, actually, lots of guns, but also a Rolex, gold and emerald cufflinks.
So good.
A ruby and diamond cross. Obsessed.
Love. This is my favourite.
The white bikini that Pam yes. wore on the wedding
so
day.
So sweet.
And
saved.
Of course, the infamous high eight sex tape, which you could only play in little camcorder. Mm-hmm. So when they're initially, you know, looking at it, they think it's just going to be like, who knows? So when they discover it, obviously...
Wild.
Dollar signs flash into their eyes.
I have to ask, have you guys watched it?
Nope, no. Never ever seen a celebrity
sex tape.
Sex tape.
No,
never,
me either.
Never will.
I've really always
I've watched the Colin Farrell one.
Oh, yes.
Oh, I've heard yeah, about it.
Breakfast, lunch and dinner.
Wow.
I can't believe he has one. Wild.
And like absolutely no one cares.
Yeah, well, of course not, because he's a bloke. But this was the OG leaked home movie, you know, before Kim Kardashian, before TMZ, before Red Tube, before The Fappening, there was Pam and Tommy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Gautier starts trying to sell the tape. He enlists the help of Milton, Uncle Milty Ingley, an overweight, pipe-smoking, cheapskate studio owner. The one played by...
Nick Offerman.
Yeah. And he writes loads of really brilliant books.
Yeah, he does.
Listen to his celebrity hometown on My Favourite Murder. And he writes all about like connecting with nature and trying to distance yourself from the internet.
Oh, cool.
It's really interesting, actually. Highly recommend. But I do really like him as an actor as well. I feel like he's a person who, even if he's playing a despicable character, I can't help... But
yes,
like,
totally.
And that is something that I don't think Seth Rogen has
managed.
Absolutely not. And that's the difference.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So anyway, they do start working together, trying to sell to actual distributors. But it was incredibly illegal to distribute porn without a release. So when they turn to the very embryonic version of the internet, they start setting up websites like pamsex.com and decide to cut out the middleman, the distributor. All they had to do, whoever went on this website, was follow the instructions to send $59.95.
Expensive.
Yeah, very expensive, but it was a high quality product. to a t-shirt place in Canada, and then the money would be funneled through a bank in Amsterdam. Also that it was like supposedly untrackable.
It's wild how... watching these characters engage with the World Wide Web for the first time.
Yeah, especially so Pam and Tommy when they're like, what the hell what is the this?
Yeah, when they go into the library.
Feels hard to imagine.
Yeah, and they got an advance to do all of this from a mob.
Yeah. They got a loan.
Pornographer, yeah. So they got a loan and they just fucking spent it.
Which just like basically puts so much pressure on Gautier and it completely destroyed him, the stress of knowing
they call it loan sharks?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he was head of operations, right? Which meant head of everything, apart from having his hands on the money, which is what Offerman did.
Yeah, exactly. So obviously, if you sent this money, you received a VHS in the post. And
those were the days.
Yeah. The VHS was of a married couple on their honeymoon, a private video, making it such a violation. It's full of I love yous and you're so beautiful. Which is just horrid because it's completely voyeuristic. We are not meant to be watching this. And that is entirely the tone of the film. And it's what people got off on. But while the video turned Lee into a rock and roll hero of sorts, you know, a huge dick swinging rapscallion in the public's eye.
Biggest dick in rock and roll.
Yeah, exactly. Famously. Anderson became something of a punchline. She had no sex-positive bloggers or pro-plastic surgery tweeters that, you know, to defend her, to come to her aid.
Yeah.
It was just tragic and it was total exploitation. Also soon, knockoffs were being sold, you know. This new way of distributing porn meant that there was no one to sort of monitor anything. It was like the Wild West of selling pornography. And people were re-recording the VHS and selling them in car parks for up to $175. Mm. People were... obsessed with it. It was hot property and everyone wanted a piece. So it took 2 months for Tom and Pam to even notice that the safe was gone. So by that point, the things were already so far in motion. And it was awful because at this point, the couple were in a really happy place, which I think is what the show is trying to indicate, right? That they were really, really in love despite Tommy's substance abuse. They were crazy about each other. Despite the fact that they... actually just didn't really know each other.
I know that that dinner scene, which is lovely because it shows how much Tommy loves Pam, where he makes her spanakopita and all of this food from his mother's side of the family, right? Is he half Greek, maybe?
Yes, I believe he is.
Yeah, when he throws the shot glass and he goes, I'm Greek.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it.
And then Pam is like, oh, what? So where does Lee come from? And all of this stuff. And they're like only just discovering things about her husband, like what his surname is.
And yet they want like babies straight away and all of this other stuff. No desire to know who one another actually is.
Yeah.
It's hard as well because she like speaks a lot about feeling really special. Like she was the only one who could get him out of his bad moods. And he used to like dress up in her clothes and they'd have like a really silly time together. Like it was full of love. But also, you know, the highs were high and the lows were low. Okay, so when they became aware that the safe and the tape were missing, it became apparent very swiftly that it was spreading much faster than they could contain it. It came to a head when they found out that the magazine Penthouse, the same one that had published the stolen Polaroids in foreign countries, that they had a copy. And they were convinced that they would publish it to get back at Hugh Hefner, who was basically...
Rivals.
Playboy was the rival. Because Pam was so integral to Playboy. So they filed a $10 million civil lawsuit against everyone who they thought might have a copy, including Penthouse, despite Pam being like, I don't think we should, because what if it, you know, riles them up and makes them publish it? And everyone was like, no, Pam, we know what we're doing. Just let us file it. What happens?
Ugh. Horrendous.
Exactly what Pam worried about. The judge denied the Lee's request for a temporary restraining order against Penthouse, and the magazine put out its June issue with Anderson on the cover and a written description of the tape, including quoted exchanges inside. They didn't have the rights to post the tape because obviously it was filmed by Pam and Tommy, so they had the copyright, but they posted all of those stolen Polaroids again, and in the UK and the US. Just horrible. Tragic. It just obviously took a massive toll on Pam. And I don't know if you've seen this bit in the series yet. But she, you know, at least due in part to the stress of it, I'm so sure she had a miscarriage. They kind of rejig the narrative in the show to be like she's meant to have this big monologue and Baywatch and they cut it. But in reality, she was actually filming a film called Barbed Wire, which was meant to be the thing that like changed her career and blew
it's like and... the Barbarella to Jane Fonda's career.
And apparently like the whole time she was filming it, Tommy would come on set and be very controlling, and it was all very high stress for her, but it was all worth it because she was going to do this movie that was going to change her career. And then it just pammed. Oh my god. It panned. That's awful. I said it was so much like empathy as well. It panned for Pam. Really tragic. And that coupled with, you know, constantly being in the press, it just took a massive toll on her. And also because this took 2 years for the bootleg to go viral.
Yeah.
That's so long to be so dealing with the stress.
Jesus.
Yeah. And the judges, they just do nothing to protect the Lees. And eventually they are forced to settle, selling the tape to Club Love in a bid to try and control its distribution. But they completely underestimated the internet and how far this tape would go. It sold hundreds of thousands of copies over the next few years, making $77 million in less than 12 months, which Pam and Tommy saw none of.
That's so disgusting. Yeah.
So it had huge repercussions for Pam and Tommy in their personal lives, which total strangers were profiting off of from invading their privacy. And that really isn't explored in the show, so...
But that is the show.
That is the
because
show.
Because Pamela Thomas Anderson didn't give her consent for it to be made into a show. No. So it's so fucked up.
But this is what's so interesting. So they've taken Gautier's narrative and gone from this Rolling Stone article, which actually explores nothing of what happens to the couple afterwards and what the effects of all of this has had on their lives, which I think is what's the most important lesson to be learned from all of this.
Agreed.
So an extremely difficult and traumatic time for both of them. Pam feeling deeply violated and Tommy leaning on substance abuse to deal with the feeling of just being totally helpless. And these two really did love each other. They were obsessed with each other, something that's very much shown in the show. But again, as we've said, they had no idea who one another actually was. But they have kids really, really quickly. They have two sons with great names, Brandon Thomas Lee and Dylan Jagger Lee.
Dylan Jagger Lee. I would have sex with that person.
just for the name.
He was born in 1997, so he'd be
okay.
He'd
be
a little cougar.
Yeah.
Rare. But Pam had home births because she was so scarred by the lack of privacy. I know, tragic.
God, that could have been dangerous.
Yeah, incredibly dangerous. It wasn't easy, though. Like, the couple's relationship was super tumultuous. Pam filed for divorce in between the two births, but they reconciled, which is a recurring theme for them. But in 1998, they get into this huge fight whilst Pamela is holding the seven-week-old baby Dylan. And Lee attacks her and kicks her in the back. Yeah.
What the fuck?
So she files for divorce.
Good.
And he goes to prison for 6 months,
good,
pleading no contest to the charges. Yeah. And Pam, at the time, she said, like, I'm really proud of him for taking responsibility, which again seems to be a running theme of, like, thinking he's going to change, thinking he's going to get better. And he just doesn't. Then in 2000, all of this as well, I cannot express, the minutiae was just consistently in the press. There was no privacy. Like, them getting to know each other was, like, completely revolving around the narrative that was coming out in the gossip magazines.
Yes.
And in 2000, Tommy told People magazine, we're back on. But then they break up again. And then they try again in 2001. And it's so hard because his substance abuse crossed with loving each other so deeply. It's this really toxic cycle that keeps repeating itself. You know, he'd done so much. The spousal abuse, they shared a tattoo needle at one point and he had hepatitis C. Ugh. And he gave it to her knowing that he had it.
Oh.
And obviously the threatening of their children. It's just so hard. They obviously had this incredible trauma bond that meant they just couldn't let each other go. So then in 2008, they give it another shot. Tommy is quoted saying, this is our 801st try. And they move back in together and stay together for 2 years until they divorce again in 2010. After that, Pamela said, there was Tommy and then there was no one else. He was the love of my life. We had a wild and crazy beginning that was too much for the both of us. Mm. It's just devastating. It's like really, really...
I wonder what would have happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If that sex tape hadn't gotten out.
Yeah. And
been
if...
stolen.
Totally. And also if they just had the time and space to get to know one another, which wasn't possible because they felt this need to just... push through, have kids, do all the, like, more. It sounds really devastating because they obviously have this incredible connection.
Yeah.
Tough. So fast forward to 2018, and this is where I think it's really interesting and it's not something that I think they'll go into in the show. There is a huge lesson to be learned by all of this. This controlling of the narrative, they were essentially the people who taught us all these lessons around privacy and invasion of celebrities. And it all kicked off in 2018 when Pam and Tommy and their kids, they all have Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and they have the ability to control the narrative a bit more. Pamela is really quiet, barely on socials. However, Tommy and his sons are. And Tommy posts a very denigrating passage about his son, Brandon, who he very publicly didn't get on with on Father's Day.
What the fuck?
Saying that his kids were assholes and ungrateful.
Oh my God.
Jesus.
And then within a matter of hours, Brandon responded with a picture of Tommy after he had knocked Tommy out. And a message about how Tommy hadn't been present enough to be calling himself a father. So this is just putting them back in the spotlight. A very private affair once again on the front pages of news like platforms. It's devastating, especially for Pamela. And she, I think, handles it with the utmost class of that she possibly could have. So she released a piece that she wrote herself, I believe it was on TMZ. And it starts, for the record, I have made no comment anywhere to anyone before this. Beware of tabloid gossip. This is a matter of life and death. I am serenely calm. I feel justice is at work. I am not frantic or, as reported, devastated. I am hopeful. This is not new to us. I have complete faith in Brandon and his team to resolve this unfortunate and sad situation regarding his father. And I pray that Tommy gets the help he needs. She goes on to say how this narrative will not be controlled by others and that she won't be publicly arguing with Tommy online. that in fact she won't speak to him until he is sober, completely sober, and that his fiance, Brittany Ferlin, do you know her? She's from Vine. She's like this Vine star, was keeping him drunk when he just really needed help. The piece ends with, Tommy feels humiliated and is attempting to destroy his own son. This is the devil, the disease of alcoholism. It's incredibly sad, and Tommy rails against her, but it becomes very clear that Pamela just wants to end being in the public eye without control over her own narrative. I know. And her final post on Instagram, which has since been deleted, is she posted this statement saying, this will be my last post on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook. I've never been interested in social media, and now that I'm settled into the life, I'm genuinely inspired by reading and being in nature, and I am free. Let's hope that you all find the strength and inspiration to follow your purpose and not be seduced by wasted time. That is what they want and what they can use to make money. Control over your brain. Which I think is just, it's so interesting how this is like the lesson that she's learned over time, like really excited to be picked up by the press and have all these people shove her into the spotlight, and then being like, no, I refuse now. Yeah. I won't let other people control my narrative. And her horror and oh God, trauma, I guess, was the learning curve for the whole of how we now run the internet, how we have laws over revenge porn, and essentially knowing that anything you put on the internet can haunt you for the rest of your life. She was the one who taught us this.
Yeah, and then you think of something like the Fappening, which is such a recent occurrence. Yeah. You know, that's very similar to that, and how many people's have been, how many people's lives have been, maybe not completely destroyed, but really altered for the worse.
And for the people who don't know what the Fappening is, that was, when was it?
I think it was like 2018.
Oh, was it that recently? I thought it was a bit longer. Where a bunch of celebrities were hacked, and their
iClouds were hacked. Yeah,
their private images and
photos, photos
were just sent out on the internet for anyone to see, and lots of people did look at them and see them.
Terrible.
Yeah, like it's happened to some people that we know. It's just like really disturbing.
But this is like, they were better protected than Pamela was, which is terrifying because they were badly protected. But it, you know, since this time, like, things are changing. There are more laws coming in, and every single traumatic incident is a learning curve. And actually, since this time, Tommy Lee has gotten sober. He now spends his time tending to his bonsai trees.
Aww.
Well done. But Gautier, well, I think his revenge is his life ever since. He is now a foggy 57-year-old who still works as an electrician and grows marijuana in his garage outside Santa Rosa, California. He intended to humiliate Tommy, but instead he was quoted saying, I made his career. That's what happened. I never intended to, but I made him an icon.
Are you fucking kidding me? How many albums had he sold before he met you, Gautier?
Yeah, that's true. But I think, to be fair, he really made, like, as in, Tommy was the drummer of the Motley Crue. The Motley Crue were really famous, and he was obviously famous, but he kind of made him this, like, you know, that huge thing of having the biggest dick in Hollywood.
Mm.
And I think that's kind of the irony of the irony. Whole thing.
Yeah. Mm.
Gautier and his small penis.
God, Gautier's a bit of a spiritual fuckboy as well.
Oh my God, 100%.
There's a chat about karma when he was smoking that tape with the feather and the,
sage. Fucking weird.
Whoa.
Yikes.
Yeah, fucking weird.
Absolute fucking fuckboy.
Can we talk about how good Lily James is in that series as well? Like, the first...
Yeah, she looks perfect for it.
She looks amazing, and, like, I haven't always kind of been her biggest fan.
Me neither.
Just in, you know, but I really thought this character really suited her so well, and she did such a brilliant job, and so did Sebastian Stan.
I also think they do entertain, like, it's very entertaining.
Yeah.
She is such a kind of free, like, big
actress.
Camp actress, and her performance really suited Pamela's character.
I totally agree.
Mm.
Like, real ball of sunshine.
Yeah. I think she does suit camp.
Yeah,
she does camp well.
Totally.
She does camp so well.
Yeah.
Like, fuck Downton Abbey. This is your calling.
Absolutely. Yeah. I totally wholeheartedly agree.
Oh, yeah.
What a pleasure it is.
What a pleasure.
Should we do our listener story?
Thank you so much, Hannah, for that episode.
Yes, let us know what you think of the series as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
And, you know, as it continues to come out.
We'll update, yeah.
Do you have a little listener story for us?
So I was dating a guy, and I told him to look at some pictures on my phone of something. Maybe a house or my dog, who knows. Anyway, he's scrolling through the pictures and suddenly throws my phone on the couch and says, "Oh my God. Oh my God, I'm so sorry, I went too far. I saw a picture of your boob, I barely looked." We hadn't got to the clothing optional part of the relationship. And I looked at him confused because I don't have any pictures like that on my phone. So I pick up my phone to see what he's talking about. Apparently he saw a picture of a wound on my middle toe from a medical procedure I had had. At a passing glance, it vaguely resembled a boob and a nipple. He really must have been trying to be a gentleman and not looked. I told him what it was and he was so embarrassed because I was laughing hysterically. Next time I saw him, I had to tell him that I had told my friends too because they all thought it was hilarious. He was slightly embarrassed, but I still couldn't help but laugh.
Oh! See, this is a person with good boundaries.
Absolutely. That is a true gen. Absolutely how Gautier so should good. Have reacted.
Right?
Just chuck the high eight straight out the window.
Oh,
bless him. He's a keeper.
He is a keeper, for sure. What a keeper, yeah. Not amazing.
Links for all of our resources are in the show notes, so please do check them out.
Next week, we're going from the sex scandal of Pam and Tommy to the mystical fuckboys of the tarot. Ooh.
In the meantime, you can help us by rating us and following the F-Boy podcast wherever you're listening.
And if you have your very own listener story, don't be shy. Be sure to send them to our submissions at our website, fboypodcast.com, or slide into our DMs.
Slide in.
Yes, you can find even more fuckboyery on Instagram and Twitter very occasionally at fboypodcast.
Special thanks to our brilliant producers at Audio Boom Studios.
So watch out, the fool, the magician, and the emperor.
We're coming for you.